yeah, in those aspects, I think I'm always trying to put me first, and my work should come second.
If you are identifying as a creative and you pour all of it into one art form, if you get stuck, it can be so infuriating.
So draining.
I want to explore outside of LA, which I think would be really fun.
Welcome to Kitchen Tape. This is Rose.
And this is Cassie. And today we are joined by Jiyoon.
Hi, my name is Jiyoon. I run a bakery studio in Los Angeles under By Jiyoon. I do like nostalgic Korean inspired pastries, but not just limited to Korean ingredients. But a lot of my nostalgia is tied to my culture and the food memories around that. So it stems from that, but a lot more inspiration does come from things I'm just excited about day to day or more in my current food life. I'm kind of just implementing all of those inspirations into anything I create, and it's all just under my name.
Well, we love your baked goods.
Yeah, maybe. Especially the misogaru cookie. Yeah, I'm a little upset I don't see it on the table here.
I'm like, okay, end of
podcast. I thought you got the hint. There was snacks, you know.
Damn it.
Well, for those of you who aren't familiar with her, though, she makes really exquisite, I would say technically perfect.
Oh,
yeah,
thank
you. Everything is so beautiful.
It's so pretty. It's so clean.
That's a high
clean.
Compliment.
Yeah, we're big fans.
Huge fans.
So we're excited to get to know you a little better and ask you
here.
Some questions.
Yeah, so we'll just get right into it.
Also, I will say, you guys have great voices for podcasting.
Oh.
No, really. Like,
flattering guests.
You guys have different tones, but it complements each other super well.
We're like sirens. We're luring them in.
Sirens.
Stay tuned.
For our siren song at the end. So yeah, you mentioned that you work from home, and I also work from home, and we both live alone. But so I know that it's kind of hard to work at home and alone and not really have a team and that sort of interaction. Mm-hmm. How are you building community when you are kind of isolated in what you do?
Honestly, community is something right now that's been on my mind a lot, and I'm trying to figure out a way to cultivate a more tight-knit community, especially, like, yes, being online and being on Instagram and posting photos and all these things and, like, sharing my process or sharing parts of my story definitely helps to build a more general community that just appreciates your art and what you do and all of that. But I think going out to pop-ups, I've been amping up my pop-up game, actually meeting customers in person and getting to talk to people and, you know, communicate with them and get to know them. Often, you know, there's not enough time for us to have a full-on conversation when
definitely.
I'm just taking their orders and just giving them pastries.
Yeah, when
but
the pastries are fire.
Yeah. No eye contact.
No, but really, I think working at home alone, there's like a disconnect between, like, when you first make something and create something, I think it can be really exciting. Mm-hmm. And then when you make the same thing over and over and over and over again, you don't recognize how special it was, or you lose that. At least for me, I lose that feeling. But then when I go to pop-ups or customers are so excited about having the pastries or being able to just to get like one cookie, it kind of validates what I'm doing and what, like, why I started in the first place. But also just like reassures me that I'm doing good work. It makes me excited about what I'm doing all over again, which I think is great. So I guess in-person community that way. I also recently started a newsletter.
Exciting.
Yeah. Also By Jiyoon. Everything By Jiyoon.
People on brand. This is important.
Basically on there, I feel like with Instagram and captions, there's not a lot I can say. Everything's a bit short form. Also, I'm on YouTube.
Also By Jiyoon.
Jiyoon Chang, just my name. Okay. But I feel like both platforms are longer form. So I'm able to just express myself a lot more in depth and actually talk about topics that maybe might not be fitting for Instagram, but I can actually get really into it and kind of talk about whatever I want to talk about and whatever I think might interest people that are honestly interested enough to subscribe and read like a 5 to 10 minute post about something, which can be a lot of words, I feel like.
It's so many words.
Yeah. So, and obviously it's like the following doesn't translate over, but I don't think that's the point of it.
Yeah.
No, you know, like,
I don't think that's audiences. The,
yeah.
No, it also just like, that's not important necessarily. It's more, I feel like it's a community that really, yeah. I mean, people that subscribe, especially to the newsletter, I think it's easy to just click a follow button.
Yeah. It feels more intentional when someone's like, yeah. I'm subscribing to like mm-hmm. read about you versus like, mm-hmm. oh, you make pretty cookies, like follow.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, I'll scroll on Instagram and I see a pretty photo. I like it and then move on. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. But people that actually care about the work I'm doing, that genuinely want to support me, even if they're just reading it, mm-hmm. I feel like in a sense, I'm able to kind of cultivate a community that I can connect with on a deeper level that way.
And on your YouTube, are mm-hmm. you teaching recipes or are you just having conversations?
I will say YouTube is just my own personal creative outlet.
Oh.
It's not teaching recipes. I'm not really speaking in these videos at all. It's all more of like a visual vlog where I'm just showing what I'm doing throughout the week, and then there's text at the bottom, so it's, in my mind, it's just a way for me to be artistic in a different way.
I love this. We love outside interests for creatives, because it can get, if you are identifying as a creative and you pour all of it into one art form, mm-hmm. if you get stuck, it can be so infuriating.
So draining.
But if you can mm-hmm. step to another creative art form that still like ignites you but lets you mm-hmm. get out of that headspace, it's like so invaluable.
No, that's been huge for me. Mm. That's specifically because at least with, I don't know, I feel like I get a lot of anxiety when I'm only doing one thing and defined by one thing.
Mm.
Because I'm that, being a baker, pastry chef, whatever you want to call it, that's not all of me.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily creatively fulfill me fully just to bake and just to be like going around doing pop-ups. As much as I love it and I'm of course grateful to be able to like do this for a living, you know, I'm a creative person. I have other creative endeavors and interests that I guess I want to explore and just play around with, that's not tied to some performance like value, or that's not result oriented, that I'm honestly just doing purely for myself, right? Because especially when things are not tied to money, I think that's when I feel the most free and feel the most definitely. Just like comfortable creating. And YouTube, I'm not getting any money from it. It's time consuming as hell, but I enjoy it. And I think even just, and this is the same thing, I think obviously my opinion of what I'm doing, I think is like, should be priority, and if I love it then I should do it. But at the same time, if that one person like comments and they're like, I love your like YouTube video, and like leaving a nice comment like that for sure makes me feel good, and also helps to just kind of in a way validate, in a positive way, validate like the efforts I'm putting in.
So if you were to transition out of food, mm-hmm. what do you think you would do?
Like, I've thought about this for a long time. I trust my work ethic. At this point, I didn't in the beginning, but I trust my creativity. You know, I have like characteristics of myself that I know I can rely on. I have confidence that I would do a decent job, but I don't necessarily have an interest outside of this right now that I would be willing to do as a career. I think also the big thing is, I don't know what I would do that would allow me to work for myself. And I know personality-wise, I just don't want to work under somebody else, and that's a privilege, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So me just working for myself is the best case scenario. Yeah. I will say, in high school and then in college, I played golf competitively for like 8 years.
What?
And I was trying to become a professional golfer. So that was like, really?
Yeah, I can see this. Again, the work ethic.
That's where I got my current work ethic from, 100%. Like my like resilience and just kind of like type A personality, I think was, you know, born from that phase of my life. But so that's the thing. Yeah,
Golf.
That was my initial trajectory and like quote unquote dream job. And then I got burnt out. And I'm a very intuitively driven person. Like, I'm an emotional person rather than a practical, logical person. So if I, in my gut, feel like this is something I don't want to do anymore, I can't do it. But then on the other hand, if I really am driven by something, then no one needs to tell me to do it. Like, I'll be self-motivated. I'll unfortunately, like, overwork myself and get obsessed with that one thing. So yeah, I don't know what my career path would be, but I'm assuming it would be creative.
And you'd be excellent at it.
Of course.
I don't know about excellent.
Confident, excellent.
Yeah.
I would want some sort resilient. Of control, though. That's for sure.
Well, I remember you and I had a conversation once where you said that you taught yourself how to be type A. Like, how do you do that? Teach me how to be type A.
asking for a friend.
Asking for myself. Like, how... Because it does take a lot of discipline to, like, do this line of work for yourself as a baker. Yeah. But, like, how do you set yourself up for success working from home?
Just, I feel like all, like, most of it is admin. Most of it is planning. Most of it is setting up systems that make things easier. At least that's what I've realized. But that's also not something that, you know, I had set for me from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, each week, each event, each order, you know, you just learn from that and implement things that you learn that will make it easier going forward. So I feel like at this point, it's just been an accumulation of everything I've learned that I'm just putting into action. And I actually, when I was younger, I used to be very forgetful. You know, things like just details, but also like my material things. As a kid, I would lose like money and my wallet and just like my things. My parents would get so mad at me. And I think from then, I started keeping like reminders, to-do list. Mm-hmm. So things that would help me stay more organized. And I think now I can't function without a Google Calendar and to-do list and reminders. Like, no, seriously, I'll have like, just, I don't know how people just keep things in their head. I can't. I need my phone to remind me to do something in like 2 hours. unless it's like a big task or something that's very blatantly obvious I need to do, I just can't keep things organized unless I have systems that keep me organized. So that's been the most helpful, at least with functioning week to week, day to day, and, you know, at least doing everything that I want to do and need to do to keep the bakery going.
Sick.
Wait, but I'm curious what you guys do to keep yourselves organized throughout the week. And sane.
Who said anything about me being organized?
No, but you have your own system, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing where it was really rocky in the beginning, and I was like, okay, well, I know what it takes to make, like, one cake. How do I do this times 24? And, like, how do I keep this organized? And, like, what's the flow of having the right amount of ingredients and the right amount of cake baked off? And drawing from, like, you know, everything I learned working in bakeries prior to starting on my own was very helpful.
That's so true.
But it did take a while. It took, like, months before I was like, okay, this is what Monday looks like. This is... But I have, like... For me, it's a structure that I have for each day of the week where it's like Monday, all of my admin has to happen. Mm-hmm. Tuesday is also admin. Wednesday is like shopping for everything and like making sure those things happen.
We're on the same schedule.
And then bake through the weekend. Yep. It's just you just kind of get into a flow that makes sense. And then also having like a notion where it's like, this is my grocery list. This is my to-do list. Monday is like bake this and Tuesday is do this and like...
I'm like, you said you weren't organized.
Well, I write down these lists and then I forget about them until Friday and I'm like, oh, half of these things didn't get clicked. But whatever. Yeah. I will put down even the most minute thing where it's like on my to-do list, separate eggs. Even though that obviously that has to happen for me to get the cake done. But I do have to write down like everything, like mise out this and do that. Like I have to write down every single little thing or it just gets lost in my head. Maybe Rose the same way.
I definitely am similar. I would only add that I also have to make to-do lists that involve add the following things to your to-do list.
Yes.
I have lists upon lists because I definitely have a lot of things that come to me when I'm like sleeping or eating. So I have a mobile to-do list to add to my master to-do list.
I get that. That's what the reminders
do for me. And then there's like a handful of like loose scraps of paper. I have to like do a house sweep
And then you find one and you're like, wait, did I miss something?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, did I miss a whole order?
It's happened before because, I mean, there's just a lot to keep track of. And, you know, thankfully my website has automated some of that. But take a lot of custom orders, you work with brands, like you start to have different avenues that aren't as clean as if you just like work for someone else and like you get a paycheck. Yeah. So I think it's a lot to juggle. I could be better at it for sure. I think also every time you change spaces, you have to like figure out something entirely new. But yeah, it's hard, but delicious.
Yeah, that's true.
So you've worked in food for like 3 years now, since 2020?
2021. 2 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I moved here March 2021.
Oh. Well, you guys worked at Clark Street together?
Yeah, we did. We worked at Clark Street for like 3 days together. I took her spot. I was her replacement. And I like walked in and I was like, wow, this girl is so cool. I can't wait to meet her friend. And then she was like, bye.
I also, sorry, tangent, but I just assumed that anybody that walks in was like me, didn't know anything. And I did not know I was like training someone that did all of this stuff for years.
Was that your first job?
That was my first bakery job. Oh. And
she was killing it on lamb within like, how long had you been there before you got onto lamination?
I was there for like 4 months and then I was on lamb for 3 months.
Wow, yeah,
she
fast.
Was like killing it.
Yeah, but you didn't need, I was like, oh, can you get this done and take the dough out of the, and I turned my head and then looked back and she's done.
Yeah,
and I was like,
a sick little puppy. Like, I'd be like, June, what are we doing now?
Yeah,
and
I was like, why are you done? I was like, go slower. Go slower.
But so now that you've been working in food for about 2 years, what's a common misconception about working in food that you kind of want to clarify?
I have two. Oh. But they're from different perspectives, actually.
Love it.
The first one, when it comes to restaurant jobs. You know, I mean, disclaimer, I know that a lot of restaurant environments are very toxic and taxing, and that's just part of the job. And a lot of people have to take those jobs to make a living and all of that. The misconception I want to talk about is I don't think that sort of work environment with food is the only food environment that someone can work in. There are healthy work environments within the industry. I'm like,
the Baijiun kitchen.
I'm like, hiring? No, I'm not. But I also think, I mean, what we're doing, where it's hard to talk about this because I also feel like what the job I have now and I've made for myself, I feel like there's a lot of, yes, my efforts involved, but also luck. You know, I started it during the pandemic when I didn't know that pop-ups and small businesses and home bakeries were gonna pop off like the way they did. So a lot of it was just timing when it comes to luck and all those things. But I do think that even if it's not working full-time in food, there are other ways to fulfill your creative like food endeavors. That doesn't have to break your back and, you know, kind of kill the work-life balance. Like, I have a friend that is working at a restaurant. It's her last week this week. And she loves her job. She loves, like, the work they're actually doing. But every other aspect of her life has, like, deteriorated. And so she realized for herself, you know, like, she loves hosting dinner parties. She loves doing things outside of, like, the traditional restaurant work environment that she can still do and still be around food, but in the way that she wants, in the way that's healthy for her. So yeah, I think people just need to kind of open their minds and play with food and be with food in the way that they want to. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be so rigid and
it doesn't have to just be like restaurant jobs.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. And then also from the flip side, I'm like, this sounds like I'm going to be negative, but...
bring it.
It's not all glamorous.
Yes.
I'm sure you guys all know that.
I like that the two takes are, it's not all toxic, and it's not all
glamorous. I'm in the gray area. I'm in the gray area. Yes. Because also, I mean, a job just feels like a job sometimes, yeah. And that's fine, right? Yeah. That's totally fine. I really don't think that you need to be in love with your job at all times. That's not realistic.
I actually think we need to stop telling people that if they find what they love, they'll never work a day in their life.
I work every day of my life. What do you mean?
You'll work harder if you really love what you do than if you don't care.
100%.
And just get clock in and clock out.
Yeah, 100%.
I am not one of those people, though, so I will work till the grave.
I'm the same way.
And I'm like, I want to retire next week. So.
I mean, that's what I want, but it's not going to happen.
Not in food.
Exactly. I mean, I think those two perspectives, I'm advocating for the middle ground. And I think the middle ground, the gray area, is great. I'm happy to be in the gray area. Yeah, it's not all shit. It's not all glamour, but... You know, there are days that are extremely tiring and uncertain and all of those things, and there are days that are extremely fulfilling and rewarding, and all of your efforts, good and, you know, tough, are worth it. Yeah, so I think I'm trying to just give a realistic lens to what this job entails.
When you started on your food journey, is this where you thought you'd be in a couple of years?
Nope.
Next question.
That's fine. We can already touch on it. Next. So,
episode's over in like 10 minutes. I graduated college 2020. I was a COVID grad, never walked, but then I ended up coming home to my parents' house because it was March of 2020 and I just finished school at home, and then I had a lot of time on my hands, so I just got into baking that way. Once I really get interested in something, I kind of get obsessed with it for a bit. So sourdough is what started it for me.
Yes! Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a very COVID start. Sourdough and banana bread were my gateway drugs.
Literally. But sourdough, I think, also was the best thing I could have probably started with, because, you know, I think... For me, it embodied what baking is at its core. It's magic. It's creative. It's meticulous. It's, like, so sensitive at times. Yeah, I just taught myself from that to... I tried making croissants at home. Keep in mind, my parents live in the desert.
Yeah.
It's, like, 120 degrees in the summer. So I didn't know that you needed to have, like, a really, really, really cool environment when making croissants at that time. But... I mean, I just taught myself. And then that's when I wanted to get my foot in the door and just work at a bakery. I honestly, this is where my intuition came in. I didn't know where I wanted. I didn't have an end goal. I just wanted to try and start. That was the only thing I had in my mind. You know, I just felt so sure in my gut that this is something I wanted to at least try. And I feel like the way I make decisions is, will I regret not doing something? And then that's how I kind of say yes or no and then do or not do something.
I want to ask you, since you ended up at Clark Street, which is a really great bakery, Zach actually and I both started our bakeries at the same time back in 2010. Wow. And our gateway drug was also sourdough. So I love hearing that as your story. So I've known Zach a long time. It's a great bakery. Yeah. I'm wondering if it was difficult for you as someone with no experience to convince someone to give you a job. Because I feel like this gets asked a lot. Mm-hmm. So how did you actually go about getting your first bakery job in that way?
While I was teaching myself at home, I started my Instagram. And that was more so for me to just share the things I was baking, to practice food photography and be creative, but really not for any end goal, just because I thought it was fun and I thought it was creative and I had just a lot of fun doing it at home. That became my portfolio. My Instagram became my portfolio. So by that time, I don't even know how many photos I had, maybe like 20. But anything I would make, I would just post and I would have in highlights and whatnot. And there was a lot of sourdough, a lot of things like that. And then actually a pastry position opened up at Clark Street. I actually wanted a bread position. Even while I was at Clark Street, I wanted a bread position. Because I think Clark Street changed my mind. Because now I'm in pastry. But I thought bread was cooler. I really did. But I think, you know, in hindsight, pastry suits me more, at least for a business and just creatively, because I think there's a lot more you can play around with. Whereas bread, I think it's still really, really cool, but you're just perfecting the craft of it. And I think there's something really respectable about it. It's hard to convince people that I have the best sourdough in LA. You know, that's more difficult than making a pastry with the Korean ingredient that nobody has heard about.
Yeah.
So in the end, it worked out. So my Instagram became my portfolio, and then I had a stage. They gave me a stage opportunity. I lived at my parents' place 2 hours away. I said yes to a 4 a.m. stage. Me, my cousin, my sister drove out to LA at like midnight. Was it 1 a.m.? Anyway, just to get in time for the stage. And then...
Wow.
What did they do while you were working at
They one? Made me scoop like 300 cookie doughs.
I know, what did the no, people I meant who drove your, like, with you? Oh.
Like, oh, were you they, just like, sleep in the car, I'll be back in 2 yeah, hours?
They I worked 8 hours.
Oh.
I worked a full shift.
That's interesting. My stage was 30 minutes.
Just for those who don't know, a stage is a fancy word for interning for a day or longer in a kitchen.
Mm-hmm. I also didn't know that I could just do like 4 hours. I was, because I had no experience, right? So I overcompensated. I wanted to prove that I was able to learn quick and do whatever job they gave me. So, yeah, I worked 8 hours. And because Jocelyn, who was our pastry lead, she was like, you can work 4. And I was like, I'm going to work 8.
If you got any 12-hour shifts in there, I'll do it.
Yeah, I have never felt more shitty in my life after a shift. I think also because my body was not accustomed to a kitchen shift. Mm-hmm. That's so labor intensive. Uh-huh. 8 hours, like, sleep deprived. I felt like a zombie after.
And yet you still said yes to the job.
I said yes.
Yeah.
I said yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I started, basically I apartment hunted right after my shift. I had like 6 apartment viewings like lined up. Signed my lease that day. And then I got the job and then moved in like a few days later, started the job like the following week.
Damn!
Yeah, and I've been here since.
Wow, Chi Yoon is a girl who gets things done fast.
I'm impatient. I'm impatient when I want something. This is not also, I wouldn't say this is
the
normal way to do things. Or also, like, you know,
Well, it is if you're extremely talented. So.
Yeah, and driven. We've kind of talked about how taxing this is, and, you know, after your first stage, how, like, bad your body just hurts. All the physical and, like, manual and emotional labor.
Mm-hmm.
What does your self-care look like?
Ooh, self-care.
Physically, this is also something I learned over just doing it. I don't make so much that I'm breaking my back to produce certain quantities.
Mm.
I think in the beginning, I did that. Also, you know, systems were not in place in the beginning that you're doing things a more difficult way.
Mm.
Now I realize, but, you know, I also spread out my prep, like starting from Tuesday or Wednesday, instead of trying to do everything in like 2 days or one day. Just trying to give myself some breathing room. A big one for me is when I get really into my work, I will not stop for a break.
You forget to eat.
I don't even forget. I choose not to, which is worse. Which is worse. I also think, like, when I'm just on, like, go, it's on, you know, the bottom of my priority list, which it shouldn't be. So now, I think also when I was doing that, I was very anxious. I was very impatient. I felt like if I didn't do it now or get things done now, things would fall apart. You know, it was that,
like,
sort of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, survival mode.
Mm-hmm. Even though nobody was telling me to make these pastries, like, at this time, right now. You know what I mean? Like, I was putting those rules onto myself.
Yeah, your internal critic.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's calmed down a lot more now, where, you know, sometimes as soon as I start to feel a little bit achy or it's lunchtime, I will, you know, I'll, like, stop and, you know, go sit on the couch, get out of the kitchen and just, like, eat something. Or at least, like, have things around the house that if I am, like, actually super busy and I really can't, at least I'm still eating and able to fuel my body for the rest of the bake or whatnot. So physically, that way, you know, that's how I do it. But I would say mentally, emotionally, not letting this job consume my life. That's my thing. I feel like, I don't know if this is a part of my personality or whatnot, but I don't like being confined to certain things. So I think even with this job, I love it. And, you know, I'm super grateful to be able to do this, but I still don't want it to be everything. And I think that's a very valid, you know, thing to be feeling. I'm also privileged to be able to take breaks when I want and not bake a weekend and just go on a trip with my boyfriend or with my friends. I think for me, even throughout the week, because I generally will not have a full off day. That's what it's been like lately, just with like the pop-up schedules and whatnot. I'll have like 0 to 1 basically throughout the week. But for me, I don't feel burnt out. I don't feel overworked because throughout the days I'm taking breaks. You know, throughout the days I'm working like half a day and then seeing my friend for coffee and lunch, or, you know, working just like 6 hours and then going to get dinner with like friends. So I really try to keep a balance, and if I really need time away from the kitchen, I'll take it. I think at this point I'm not in the scarcity mindset that if I stop working and I take a break, things will just
disappear,
slip through my fingers, you know? I don't believe that anymore. So I feel like I have the sort of mental stability to take care of myself first. Because also I need to be happy, I need to be healthy to be able to do this work that I want to do. If I'm not in a good state, I'm also not going to be enjoying the work I'm doing. And that's the last thing I want. Yeah, in those aspects, I think I'm always trying to put me first, and my work should come second.
Well, speaking about putting yourself first, if you were to steal a little more time away from your schedule and travel anywhere in the world just to eat, not for the sights, not for the culture, although food is culture, food is all culture, but still... I just want, you're only going to eat. What country or what place would you go to?
So I was born in Korea, and I've been to other countries, you know, like in Europe and whatnot, but I have not been to like other Asian countries besides Korea and then recently Japan. So I want to go to like Taiwan. I want to go to Vietnam, Thailand, the Philippines. Like I want an Asia tour. I will say, as a Korean-American, when I go to Europe and only eat European food for, like, even a week, I need some, like, kimchi. And I need, like, I need, like, a bowl of ramen. I really do. So I really want just, like, an Asia food tour. I think that'd be amazing. Because also, Chinese food is, like, my second favorite food. Chinese/Taiwanese food.
Yeah. Taiwanese food is really good.
So good. It's my favorite.
I feel like you've been going on a lot of road trips lately. Where have you been, and what's like the best meal you've had on one of these road trips recently?
So my boyfriend and I went on a week-long trip up to NorCal. But we started in Yosemite and car camped and cooked food at our campsite for a couple days. The thing is, this is a meal that's nostalgic to me, and I don't know about other Asian families, but Korean families have to have Korean barbecue at their campsite.
I'm not Korean, and I have to have Korean barbecue everywhere.
Korean barbecue and ramen. That's like, that is our camping food. I brought pork belly. I brought like the little portable gas burner things, and you know, and then we grilled pork belly on it, and had I brought perilla leaves, like lettuce, and samjang, which is like this like seasoned paste. It's made with like gochujang, which is red pepper paste, and doenjang, which is soybean paste, that's like mixed together with like a bunch of other, you know, like garlic and seasonings, and you eat that like with your wrap, basically. It's called sam. Yeah, so I would say that's my favorite meal. You just literally just layer lettuce, perilla leaf, meat,
sauce.
Kimchi sauce, sometimes sesame oil, depends.
Oof, I love a good sesame oil.
Yeah, it's so good. That's a comfort food, but it's just something about eating out in nature just you know, it really, it feels different.
Yeah, hits different.
It hits different.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So I wanted to know, of everything you make, what's the one thing that you think you're not going to get tired of making?
That's a trick question. I get tired of making all of them.
Sure, that's why. Like, which one? Which is the one that still holds out of all the most of them? Joy?
The milk buns. Mm. It's just too satisfying. Mm. You know? I feel like every single time I make one, at least the first, like, five, I'm like, oh, so cute. And then I'll put them in their box. I'll make it, I'm like, oh, perfect. And then I'll put them on their tray. But then after that, I'm tired. And I have to do like 36, and I'm like, I'm fucking over this.
For those of the listeners who haven't had one of your milk buns, could you describe it for us real quick?
The cream bun is made from a milk bun dough made with tangzhang, which makes it, you know, light and fluffy. Tangzhang is just a combination of flour and liquid. I use milk, so milk and flour, and then you cook it over the stove and makes a paste. And that's what you add into your dough, into your, you know, when you're mixing the dough to add hydration, and then it actually makes the bread a lot fluffier. So it's a milk bun dough, and then it's sliced in half, and then it's, I make holes inside on each cut side. I use like a milk whipped cream that I fill inside first, so it's double filled basically. And then after that, there's a layer of condensed milk, and then this might be hard to explain, but I open it slightly at a so that the cut sides are slightly ajar, and then I fill cream inside. With an offset spatula, I'm basically just making it smooth and flush on the top so that by the end, there's no gaps. It's just the middle part is just filled with cream, and it's super smooth and looks, some people say, like a corgi's butt. Some people say, like, a bikini bottom. Some people say... there's a lot of different things.
We're all about the butts, yeah. Though. That's what yeah. I'm hearing.
And then it's finished with just like a light dusting of powdered sugar.
Mm. So whipped cream and condensed milk. Mm-hmm. That's the secret. Mm-hmm.
And what's the milk whipped cream?
Is milk that... powder.
Oh. In the whipped cream.
In the whipped cream.
Ooh.
Which also stabilizes it even more, mm-hmm. which is great. But whole milk powder. None of that non-fat. Whole milk powder. Yeah, none of that. And then powdered sugar. And heavy cream, that's it.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. So you're always adding, like, seasonal items, like the yuzha tart, and then there's, like, the persimmon loaf. But I feel like you have those core where it's, like, the misogato cookie or the mm-hmm. mochi brownie. Do you feel like those staples are going to be on your menu forever? Or since you mentioned, like, reaching this point where you're like, I'm kind of over some of these, mm-hmm. like, that you'll ever take those core things off?
Or are you waiting for people to fall in love with them so that you then you can yank it from them?
Yeah. I'm like, yes. I have thought about that. There are like a couple things that I guess excite me a little bit less than the other ones. But at the end, they're still my babies. And I haven't gotten to the point where I want to take anything off. I think also, you know, kind of on like a slight tangent, R&D is something I have trouble, I just struggle with it. I think it's really difficult for me to create constantly. I feel like I have some sort of mental block or something where I'm not allowing myself to just create freely. So that's something I'm always trying to work on. So I feel like when I have enough things on my menu where it's maybe too crowded or it doesn't make sense, then I would take it off. A lot of the core things I think aren't necessarily seasonal. So I think that's why it's just, that's like my main menu. Mm. And then certain items like, yeah, the kabocha persimmon cake loaf or, yeah, like the yuja passion fruit. Like some things I'll just rotate out. Mm-hmm. But I do think that my style so far or like system has just been, when I create something new, it just comes out. And that's it's not as consistent as I would like it to be. But I think it is true to just my creative process and how fast or slow it is during that time. So yeah, I feel like, no, I don't want to take anything off yet. Also, there's been demand, which I think makes it.
Don't you ever get rid of.
I mean, that's how you know you've made it.
When
you
start. It's about me. It's from me about the misogato.
Yeah.
Like, if you ever.
I know. Yeah, maybe. I could see it happening, but not anytime soon.
You've been popping up mostly in, like, Los Angeles and Orange County, but you recently branched up to Santa Barbara. Where has been your favorite place to pop up?
Santa Barbara was... I was blown away. I've never had a line wrap around a building like that. That was crazy. Also, I didn't know that I had customers in Santa Barbara. Like, I just didn't. So I think going there and seeing people wait, like, at least an hour just to grab even just one cookie was crazy. And very touching, of course. It was... I really felt the love that day.
Was the line there, like, when you showed up?
Yeah.
Were there already people outside?
I got there at 10:30, late, for an 11 a.m. pop-up. But also, I can set up in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So it was like fine. But I thought it was Ken's customers. I was like, oh my God, it's like a Sunday rush. Like, I'm so happy for him. I said that to my boyfriend in the car. And then I walk in and I was like,
where is everyone?
I was like, oh. And he was like, that's like, they're waiting for you.
Aww. That's so sweet.
Yeah, which was crazy. And everyone was so nice. Yeah.
So how many customer compliments and thank yous do you think equals 1 hour of sleep? Because I feel like that's the math that's happening in my head while I'm doing pop-ups.
I know what
it's
you
like
mean.
When I get to about 50, I'm like, okay, I feel like I slept another hour.
What you mean? I know what you mean. But also when you get that one person that's like so grateful, that
and
means everything. Yeah,
yeah,
it really does.
Or you do cry.
Or you do cry, yeah. Like... That makes it worth it, for sure.
So we've come to the end of our little chat, and it's been so lovely having you. But before we do our signature rapid fire questions, we want you to take a moment to hype yourself up. Tell us something that's coming up for you, something you're excited about, the biggest thing you got going on for 2024.
I don't have anything concrete, but I have goals. I have intentions. I want to pop up in the Bay. I want to pop up in New York. I want to explore outside of LA, which I think would be really fun. I do have a little bit of a customer base there that, like, people here and there will ask me to come. It's hard to gauge how many people are actually going to come, but I still, that would be something that would be amazing to do.
So going national, baby.
National, taking this
national
show on the road.
Yeah, I just have no idea how to logistically do that.
Yeah,
well, we
hard.
Can talk. We can talk after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, and then I want to, this isn't in the talks, but I want to host a pastry class.
Yeah.
Show people just how to build the cream buns and something. Yeah, something that, again, that's a sense of community for me, where I can really just be able to have extended quality time with people and be able to work on something together and create something together. I think that would be a lot of fun for everybody involved.
Are you aiming for like in-person classes or like virtual classes?
Ooh. This
or
one's
both?
Gonna be in person.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, eventually virtual would be fun.
Okay, we're going to head into the rapid fire. So here are the rules. These are not long form. You have to just say the first thing that pops into your mind, and then we're moving on. These are hot takes only, all right? Yeah. There's no wrong answers. There's only Casey-approved answers.
Okay, fair.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Go for it.
Your favorite thing to eat right now?
Spam.
favorite kitchen utensil?
A good knife.
What is your favorite flavor combination?
Anything nutty and sweet together. Does that count?
Yeah. What are you currently reading?
Rick Rubin's A Creative Act, A Way of Being.
What song is repeat on your playlist?
Always by Daniel Caesar.
How do you feel about hopscotch?
Neutral.
Hot take, chef coat or apron?
Chef coat? Oh. I thought you said that was a company, Chef Co. I was like.
It was like a chef's.
Apron. I've never worn a chef coat in my life.
Do you actually wear your aprons?
Yes, I do.
How many do you
have? Because I wipe my hands on them.
Yeah. Grubby little fingers.
Yeah, I do.
Done. That's it. Thank you for being with us today on Kitchen Tape. This is Rose.
This is Cassie.
This is June. Thank you for having me.
And as we always say, eat cute.
Be cute. Bye.
Thank you for joining us this week on Kitchen Tape. Our theme music is created by Dan Crabtree. You can subscribe on Spotify and Apple to be notified when we release new episodes every other Tuesday. If you enjoyed this week's episode, we'd love it if you left us a review. If you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, contact us on social media. You can reach Rose at TRoseWild and Cassie at IBakeMistakes or email us at KitchenTapePod@gmail.com. Catch you next time on Kitchen Tape Podcast.